Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
It's been a while for us, but for you it's been probably 2 weeks. Welcome back to It Takes Two. We didn't go anywhere. We did, but the podcast didn't. In this episode, we're covering off The Object of My Affection and Chasing Amy.
Yes, it is Pride Month.
It is indeed.
And we've gone for some weird options.
I
where would... people are not very respectful of people being gay.
I had never seen The Object of my Affection, which has...
And I'd never seen Chasing Amy.
Yeah, so we were coming at it from different points of view.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Aniston, Paul Rudd.
Yes.
Very interesting couple, not couple in this episode, in this movie.
Yeah.
And with Chasing Amy, it's Ben Affleck and Joey Adams, as long with Jason Lee being the triangle in this relationship.
Yeah. Now, I have been reluctant to watch Chasing Amy for a very long time because it seemed very disrespectful to gay people.
Yeah.
And you insisted, you've been pretty insistent the whole time that I should watch it and give it a chance. I've given it a chance, and I think it's very disrespectful to gay people. And you were like, well, you gotta wait till the end and we'll see the ending. And then I waited and I was like, what is he talking about? It's not good. I will say, from my perspective coming out of this, I do still feel like The Object of My Affection is more respectful on the whole of different sexualities.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, because obviously, spoilers, Jennifer Aniston's character is in a relationship, Paul Rudd is in a relationship, Paul Rudd is in a relationship with a man. And then when they meet each other, Paul Rudd's boyfriend, who's been with for 4 years, is planning on leaving him and telling people at a social event about this.
Yeah,
so Jennifer Aniston's character is like, oh, I hear you need an apartment. And he's like, no, what's happening?
Yeah, it's really shitty. You do get the hint at it first that when everyone knows the boyfriend doesn't show up for him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when the boyfriend shows up really late, he says to him, you know, we've been invited to this party. And he says, oh, I really need to talk to you tonight.
Yeah.
And that's kind of your first hint where you're like, oh, he's going to break up with him.
Mm.
And then he insists that they go to the party because he wants to chat up a publisher.
Yeah.
And then he's sitting next to Jennifer Aniston at the thing and mentions to her that Paul Rudd's character, George, right, is going to need somewhere to stay very soon. Ahead of him actually telling him. I think he just doesn't assume that they're going to end up catching up before he talks to him, but it's still a shitty thing to do.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way into the movie because, like, Paul Rudd's character is quite... heavily liked.
Mm.
And for a movie that came out in 98, for him to be around openly gay and around children in an educational point of view is actually quite interesting. And it's very, because it feels like a West Coast thing, but it's set in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's definitely a moment at the beginning where obviously going into it, we know what the concept is, or the general concept is, but there's definitely moments at the beginning where you get the impression that people don't know he's in a relationship with a man, but then they do. So it is actually, he is actually more open than you think it is, because it is like almost parallels in Chasing Amy with I can't think of his name, the gay male character in that, it was a D.
Sorry, yes. I was going to say it's a complete opposite for Chasing Amy because are very, like...
Yeah, it's... What I mean is
that... Scared of gay people.
Yeah, there's this character who we're introduced to as their friend, who's a gay man, who very much is putting on a persona to seem straight.
He plays a... To help, because they work in comics.
Yeah.
And he plays this character on stage that is very much... he literally quotes it. He says, black rage, and it's about, like, the white people keeping black people down.
Yeah, he's trying to be like James Baldwin or someone. Yeah, like it's very much, you know, playing into kind of civil rights era.
Yeah.
And like the Black Panthers and things like that kind of, those are the kind of stereotypes he's going for. And the idea is that he is a black gay man and he can only be one stereotype.
Yeah.
And he can't hide the fact that he's black.
Yeah, it's Dwight.
Dwight.
Elwell. Elwell as Hooper, yeah.
Oh, as Hooper. Oh, so I was getting the actor's name rather than the character's name.
That's fine.
Dwight. Yeah, he, but it very much, like, when you meet both, like, George and Hooper, like, you get this kind of two sides to them, but then it turns out in Object of My Affection, George is actually quite open. Like, people around him do know that he's gay and is in a relationship.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because you get this the same sort of setup of, like, the opposite setup where you get these two boys from New Jersey being one fascinated and two terrified of homosexuality. Jason Lee's character, Banksy, is like the right across the spectrum when it comes to this. Obviously spoilers for the end of the movie, but like
I think that's such a cop-out, by the way.
Why? For me or for the
movie. Like, I think it's such a cop out. We will spoilers for the end of the movie, and I mean they don't really dig into it, but the supposed reveal is that the reason he's so homophobic is because he's gay.
Yeah,
which is absolute the epitome of bullshit gay writing by a straight white man. Are you gonna say Kevin Smith's not straight?
So it's very interesting because Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith, obviously, you know, Clerks and Mallrats and Dogma and all that other jazz. Jay and Silent Bob. He wrote this from a point of view of being confused about his sexuality.
Right.
Obviously, there was a, like, as it was referenced in Chasing Amy, and I'm not defending the movie, I'm just saying, you know, there's a, you know, dick and fart jokes are the way to go. Like, that's, like, the running gag through the movie.
But there's a lot, like, a ridiculous amount of homophobia.
Yes.
There is racism, there is sexism from these characters that we're supposed to identify with, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously we're written from Kevin Smith's point of view. Like, Ben Affleck's character is supposed to be himself.
Yes.
No, he has said that outright. Yeah. Don't. That was, he wrote it as himself.
It's a little hard to be like, I'm Ben Affleck in this situation.
Yeah. And both Ben Affleck's character and Jason Lee's character are horrible human beings. They're awful people. I wouldn't want to spend a second with either of them. And the fact that the most confusing thing in the whole movie for me is not that the, you know, the lesbian character, whose name isn't even Amy, that annoyed me.
Yeah.
what's her name? Ashley? No, something else became Alyssa.
Yeah.
It's not that she turns straight, so that is bullshit to turning straight. People are allowed to be bisexual, okay? And weirdly, you know, the scene where all her lesbian friends find out that she's dating a man and are kind of disappointed in her, that does happen in real life. But probably not, you know, the way that Kevin Smith imagines it. But it's not the fact that she is bisexual. That's totally fine. Even though they never say that at all once in the movie. Yeah. Or pansexual, or whatever she is. It's the fact that, like, she's just suddenly so obsessed with him, and she's like, I was just waiting my whole life to find the perfect someone, and it's you. You're so wonderful. And he's just this, like, garbage bag dressed as a human. Like, there's no redeeming qualities for him at all. He never does anything actually nice. He doesn't have any good opinions. He doesn't have a personality. He doesn't, like, do anything. He's just, like, the most mediocre, he's below average, he's below mediocre, he's just like a level of scum, and and she's like, oh, all I needed was to see you, and now I like men, and it's like, what, What are you talking about?
Yeah, it is very... The movie's tone changes quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from... Because I feel like the whole universe of Kevin Smith movies... Because they are in one shared universe. Like, the characters come back and forth even though they're played by the same actors.
Yeah, that's weird to me. Yep. I did write a note about that at one point where I was just like, how does this, like, Jay and Silent Bob situation make sense? Because, like, Ben Affleck is in these other movies as different characters.
Yeah, and same with...
And Jay and Silent Bob interact with him in other movies as different characters.
Yeah.
So they must know that this guy is a clone of these other guys. Including one is like a demon, I think. I don't know.
And Dogma, they're angels.
Oh, they're angels.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Close enough.
Close enough. Lucifer is an angel.
True. That reminded me of that claymation thing. Anyway, I don't remember where I was going. I've been derailed here. Help.
You were talking about the View Askew
universe. Oh, yeah, yes, yes. It's a shared universe. Yeah. And I always pictured it as, like, sort of not real. Like, it's reality, but it's not real reality. You know, there's that moment...
Sub-reality.
Sub-reality. Where they reference back to Clerks.
Yeah.
And I think I was going to say I made you watch it, but I think we watched it together.
Yeah.
And there's the guy who dies in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And then one of the people has sex with a dead body.
Yeah.
And they mention it in there. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, you know that person? Yeah, like, you know. Yeah. So it is all within the same universe. I feel like it's that very much small town, but it's not small town because they are, from New Jersey and New Jersey's not small. Sort of like this like teenage mindset about sexuality.
Hmm.
And I think that's where the movie's playing from. Where I feel in the object of my affection, it's far more realistic.
Yeah.
There are some moments that were sort of like, oh, I don't feel comfortable about this. Because in the movie, they move in together. Paul Rudd, Jennifer Aniston move in together.
Yeah.
There's off and on between her and her current boyfriend who's like, looks like a 60-year-old man. And, you know, 98, Jennifer Aniston was like, you know, front page magazine, Friends was so popular, that kind of era of her being super popular. And they sort of end up in a relationship where they're dating each other, but not, they're romantically involved, but not physically involved.
Who, Paul Rudd and
they're
not supposed to be romantically involved, but she definitely falls in love with him.
Yeah.
But it's more, I find that more believable than Ben Affleck saying he's in love with Alyssa and the other one. I think that from the get-go, Ben Affleck is in lust with Alyssa.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's never, like, I don't feel like there's a connection
there. Can you remind yourself just of, like, why I mean that it's like the schoolboy ideal of sexuality and homosexuality is that cringe scene where he confesses how much he likes her, likes to Alyssa in the car,
mm-hmm.
and they get out and then they do the whole, like, massive interaction in the rain.
Yeah, yeah.
So that whole moment is so toxic. That's the only time
anyone makes any sense in that movie.
Yeah.
Is her reaction to it.
Yes.
And then she comes back and kisses them and then it's not gay anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, did we enter an alternate reality right at that moment after she left and we're suddenly in his, like...
But that whole sequence reminds me of The Notebook where he's talking about how he wrote her a letter every day.
I gave up on The Notebook halfway through it.
I understand.
So I've never seen the end of The Notebook.
But I just find it funny that these two scenes are borderline similar.
Right.
From setup to execution to one person monologuing and the other person completely changing their mindset. And that's both, like, the Notebook is, like, regarded as, like, a really romantic movie. But then the same as...
It's not. It's some bullshit.
Yeah, but that's, I would say, general masses.
I will say the only thing I know about The Notebook is that she absolutely should have ended up with the other guy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Titanic is another perfect example.
I think it's James Marsden plays the other guy as well, and he's just like a really nice guy.
Yeah.
That's like in love with her, and she's in love with him, and then she's like, I gotta go hang out with a million geese and this asshole.
That's what every woman wants, don't
it's
you know?
Not, it's not. Get Kevin Smith on the phone. I'll say, this is not what women want.
No, I'm saying million.
The million geese. Yeah, I know. But yeah. I think that Kevin Smith agrees with you. And that's why he's doing this
yeah,
scene.
Yeah. It's, there's one scene that I found uncomfortable in The Object of My Affection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they're almost going to have sex.
Yeah.
And I was like.
And it fucks up their whole relationship.
Yeah.
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 And like that, like you were saying, you know, it's a pseudo-romantic relationship that they've been living together, they've been doing all this stuff together. I think at that point they had already agreed that was after George. So she's gotten pregnant with her.
Yeah, that's the whole, sorry.
With her partner.
Yeah, for the people who haven't seen that movie, that's the whole premise, is that she gets pregnant, decides she wants to have the child, but wants to have it with Paul Rudd.
Yeah, so she, like, so her, she the whole time has kind of been saying she doesn't really love this guy. Yeah. She likes him, she likes being around him, but she's not, she doesn't want to, she never wants him to move in, and then he's kind of testy about the fact that she lets Paul Rudd move in instead. And it's when she gets pregnant and she takes a day to figure out what she wants, she decides she doesn't want to be in the relationship with the guy anymore, but she wants to have the kid, and she wants Paul Rudd's character, George, to be the father of the child, as, like, to raise it as a parent.
Yeah.
Because he's an early childhood school teacher anyway, like, and he's always looking after other people's kids. And then they do have, you know, at first he's kind of freaked out by it, but then he kind of falls in love with the idea of being a father.
Yeah, because there's that scene where he's watching, like, a dad and his son playing catch, like, in the park across from their Brooklyn apartment.
Yeah, so at this point where this scene happens, where they screw everything up, he has agreed. He has gone and found her and said, actually, because when he was all iffy about it, she went and lived with the boyfriend and, you know, all that shit.
Yeah.
And then he drove her insane. So at this point, they've moved back in together. They're going to raise this child together. She's pregnant. She is clearly in love with him.
Yeah.
Up until this point, she knows that it's not reciprocated, it's not going to reciprocate it. And then she has this moment where she just, like, gives into it, and then they start kissing it, and he just kind of goes along with it.
Yeah.
And I think he just gets carried away, and then, like, the phone rings and he's like, what the hell am I doing? And she wants to continue. And he's like, no. But he obviously at that point then, the point of it is that she feels, she's going to feel awkward about it, but also she thinks that maybe there's something, maybe, you know, they can be together, or maybe he does feel the same way. But on his end, he suddenly realizes, you know, she's actually in love with him. Which means that then when he finds someone that he is interested in, he hides it from her because he doesn't want to upset her.
Yeah.
By being like, hey, I want to bring this guy home, even though that was the parameters they had agreed on originally. He knows that it will actually hurt her, even though she had said it wouldn't.
Yeah, it's
complex.
People just need to talk to each other.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. But in that, I mean, I feel like in that case, they had talked to each other, and he has realized that things have changed from when they talked to each other. Like, because they had laid ground rules that she was fine with him bringing people over. They could use her bed instead of his, because he'd have got a single bed or whatever, you know. But at this point, she's grown so attached that he knows that doing that potentially would actually harm her. But then in doing so, he ends up, you know, kind of making it worse.
Yeah, because it's a debt. I think they go through, like, a you know, sexual history thing in a much safer environment in The Object of My Affection, where the reveal of, like, chasing Amy's, like, her, Alyssa's sexual history is just, like, so mind-blowing to Ben Affleck's character that he just, like, recoils from reality and horror.
And it's so funny that, like, the same thing happens kind of in both movies, but they have opposite reactions.
Yeah.
Because in The Object of My Affection, she finds out that as a teenager he slept with a woman.
Mm.
And then she's like, oh, he could be interested in women.
Yeah.
Whereas Ben Affleck finds out that Alyssa slept with guys as a teenager, and he's like, that's disgusting. I can't believe she slept with men before me. And yeah, it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a very bizarre... Because it is that like, as Banksy's character says, it's just like, you know, there is no such...
just Banky, not Banky. Banksy.
Yeah, sorry. I keep thinking of the...
The artist.
The artist.
Yeah.
That, you know, this... He is a very... closeted from himself, and I think that's why he turns it into a hate sort of relationship. It is,
again, that is a cop out because
I understand it's a cop out. I'm just explaining.
Sorry, it's just such an annoying trope.
Yes.
Of like, oh, but he was homophobic because he was gay all along.
Yeah.
It's like, just don't. Like, why do you need to paint gay people as people who are afraid of themselves?
There's a lot of people who are afraid of themselves, though.
Yeah, but it's such an overused trope.
I know.
As, like...
Is it over... Like...
Like, and also, like, in real life, because I just... All I'm thinking of... I know this is not the same thing, but all I'm thinking of is... When the allegations came out that Kevin Spacey had assaulted minors, and he was like, oh, but I was just gay and confused. Yeah. It's like, Kevin Spacey, shut the fuck up, you're a predator. And you can quote me on that in letters to Kevin Spacey. But it's, yeah, it's just such a cop-out to be like, oh, this character was such a dick to everyone he met because he was sad and confused about his own sexuality.
Yeah.
It's like, give gay people some, like, dignity. That's not what most people are like. And also, it's not an excuse if that is if what someone is like. Like, that doesn't make it okay that they were homophobic.
Yeah. What I was going to say...
Sorry.
That's all right. We're both on the same page. What I was going to say is where he's accusing lesbianism of not being real.
Yeah, oh my God. He's like, yeah, I can understand men being attracted to men, but women can't be attracted to women because there's no dick and everyone loves dick.
Yeah.
I think that's an exact quote from the movie. Horrifyingly. So stupid.
And I think that's the bullshit that Holden, Ben Affleck's character, is sort of like getting into as well. Do you not agree?
What, like, do you mean?
That's like, because it's basically like worm tongue, like, in his ear the entire time. To the point where, like, when they end up finally sleeping together, he, like, leaves like he's been cheated on.
Yeah, but also, like, why did they do it on the couch? Where, like, does Holden not have a bed?
I don't know, because you never see, like, because you see where they're, like, it's a recording studio above, like, a magazine store or a record store, and you never ever see anything that makes sense in their apartment. It may have just been like a, let's get this prop and then use the prop, Chekhov's couch. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the explanation for that, but that is very much like, you know, I wanted to eat cereal and watch television, fix my couch, I'm leaving, you know. You're frowning like you don't remember.
Okay.
You know, there's very different tones to these two movies, even though they are similar enough to warrant this whole episode.
They came out a year apart from each other, so they are twin films.
They are.
Weirdly. Yeah. Though I will say, I probably should get into it later right now, but the object of my affection, I'll get into it in more detail. The object of my affection was in production hell for a while, so it's not like it was copying the Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah. Sorry, is there anything else?
Oh, I don't know. What do you mean? Is that the end of the episode?
No. I just normally you just like pause and then go into something else, but it was just like pause and we're like...
I don't know. I'd like to know what your thoughts are around, you know, how these films handled the topic of homosexuality. Because these are both 90s films, and we have watched other 90s films from this.
I feel both of them fall into tropes.
Yeah.
In a negative way. Jess Franer's character falls in love with a gay guy, and it's sort of like that, you know, you could look at it from the ideal of, like, unattainable man.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of where you definitely have children. In a less toxic and less homophobic way, they are sort of very similar between Holden and Jennifer Aniston's character, between Ben Affleck and Jennifer Aniston's character. Because they
Bennifer,
are
based... Bennifer, one might say.
Yeah, Bennifer. Did they have a date?
No, he just dated lots of other Jennifers.
That's right. Oh, Aniston. No.
Garner and Lopez.
Yeah, that's right. Gee, God.
He married both of those, right? Jennifer Garner and Jennifer Lopez.
I don't remember.
I think he's married both... He possibly has married both of them multiple times. He's done some weird... He just back and forth between Jennifer Garner and Jennifer Lopez.
Let's have a look here.
But not...
Spouses, Garner was between 2005 and 2018, and then Jennifer Lopez was between 22 and 25.
But is it Jennifer Lopez before Jennifer Garner as well?
Yeah, but I don't think they were married before then.
Oh, okay. They were engaged, I think. And then they broke off the engagement and he dated Jennifer Garner. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. Jennifer Aniston was with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Were they also Bennifer? No, probably not.
Oh, so Affleck and Lopez dated between 2002 and 2004.
Right. So yeah, so he dated her first.
Yeah.
And then married Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
And then married Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
That's confusing. Is he incapable of dating someone who's not named Jennifer?
I don't know.
And he never dated Jennifer Aniston. Crazy.
Yeah. I don't remember where I was going. I am lost. We're off the map. It's the same concept. It's just one is far more homophobic than the other. It's the unattainable man. And then Ben Affleck is like, I straightified a lesbian. Is that his, like, mindset of it?
I guess so.
When in reality, she was just trying to find herself. And it just becomes this weird male fantasy toxicity of, like, I found that with you, after all the weird sex stuff that I've ever had, you were the one that was enough for me. And then you end up in the weird love triangle where Banky's also in love with Ben Affleck.
I mean, is that actually established, though? We just have Holden, like, asserting it and Banky being like, what the hell are you talking about? And then at the end, they just keep nodding at each other from a distance.
Yeah, it is canon within the universe.
Okay.
Because, he ends up dating Hopper.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah. So that sort of ends through, and I think there was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I think is when they're like on a date together, like going to the movie that Jason Biggs and I can't remember who the other kid. Dawson's Creek.
Katie Holmes.
No, Dawson.
Oh, Jeff Vander
Beek.
Yeah. It's like I was just trying to think of he's because he plays himself in Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that man's name?
Because
James Vander Beek.
Yeah,
not
they're trying
Jeff
to shut down
James.
The Blunt Man and Chronic movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. It's a whole universe.
It's weird.
Yes. But yeah, that's basically the same, except for that. It's the same. It's the same.
Yeah, I do think that, like, to some extent she thinks... But I don't think she initially thinks it. I think Holden thinks it the whole way through.
Yeah.
I think the whole time he thinks, yeah, she says she's a lesbian, but she'll fall in love with me.
Yeah.
Whereas... And then he's, like, surprised, and then and that's why he, like, confesses love to her the way he does and, like, tells her all this shit, and then she's like, what are you talking about? I am a lesbian.
Yeah.
And that, whereas in The Object of My Affection, she does fall in love with him, but she knows initially, at least, that, you know, there is a boundary there and that he's not, you know, because he's gay, he's not going to be interested in her. And then she kind of, like, trips up on the fact that he has had sexual relations with a woman before.
Mm.
And, like, and is like, oh, maybe maybe there's something there, and gets kind of hung up on that to the point that then she does get really upset when she realizes that he's been dating this guy. And, you know, and she tries to pass it off as being upset that he didn't tell her, but it's very clear, it's made very clear in the movie that she is actually just upset that he doesn't return her feelings.
Yeah.
But I think she, the fact that she even tries to pass it off as something else, is she knows that it's irrational. Like, she knows that she shouldn't have ever expected him to reciprocate those feelings. Whereas I feel like Holden just always expected.
Here's what you can take away from both of these. There are way better movies out there that understand and have boundaries around, like, people's sexuality.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Some of which we've covered on the podcast before. Definitely. But it is interesting to me that these are a year apart and have a totally different concept of what homosexuality is like.
Yeah.
Just entirely different. And what people's thoughts about homosexuality are about.
And they're both set in New York State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you could see how much of a difference between, like, cultures there are, like, living in Brooklyn and living in New Jersey, and how accepting, like, New York as a place is. But then, like, even
New
saying...
New Jersey is a different state, you know that, right?
Yeah, yeah, but okay. it's across the bridge. You can, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the equivalent of, like, claiming because it's a different island, it's a different place, when you can see the South Island from the
North
Island.
But it is... They are two different states. But yeah, it is... But, I mean, Chasing Amy is largely set in New York as well. It's set between New York and New Jersey. Because she lives in New York, but they live in New Jersey. Yeah. And they meet her in New York, even though she's from New Jersey.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they are both largely set in New York.
Mm.
And, you know, at around the same time period. And yet, everyone is very respectful of George being gay and what his relationships are like. Even though he does still need to keep it kind of on the down low to some extent.
Yeah.
Whereas in Chasing Amy, she actually doesn't keep it on the down low. I mean, we do obviously have, was it Hopper? Who does have to, you know, in his professional life, pretend to not be gay, which is sad. But then we have, you know, the lesbian bar where everyone is very out and open, and she's happy to be out and open. But
it's not so much in his... It's more of his public image.
Right.
To sell his product.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, just...
Yeah, that's true, because either comic authors know that he's gay.
Yeah.
But yeah, but to the public.
And also the organizers also know that he's, like, full of shit.
Right.
Because he goes through all the paperwork to pull a gun and shoot a
car. Blanket, like, someone, yeah.
Shoot a blanket, somebody in who's asking him, like, questions from the audience and his thing. Which apparently drives up his sales, which I think's a brilliant tactic, but, like, so funny. I love that scene where young Rita, like, gets his autograph and he's just like, see that man? And he's staring at Ben Affleck, he's a white devil.
Yes.
Like, yep, that's true. That's true. He played Daredevil.
That's true. He did play Daredevil. I did take a note at one point, which was just, does Ben Affleck know how to close his mouth? I had this theory after watching this movie. So I spent a lot of the movie just being very focused on how large Ben Affleck's head is. It was astounding to me.
You mentioned it so many
times. It's so much larger than everyone else in the movie. I thought Jason Lee was a guy with a big head.
Do you know what caught my eye?
What?
How big his head is? So when you were focusing on how big his head was.
Mm-hmm. Were you looking at his teeth?
No.
Oh. I was trying to guess, were they pre or post Armageddon teeth?
It's the cigarette stains on everybody's fingers.
Oh, I wasn't looking at that.
Because that's not something you really see very much in young people these days.
Yeah.
But, like, this is before he was, like, super famous, because otherwise he wouldn't have been making this friggin' movie.
Yeah, pre-Armageddon teeth.
Mm.
And I think that's the problem. I think the reason they had to replace all his teeth and his teeth look like baby teeth is because his head is so large that his teeth look really small. But I also came up with a theory during this movie, which was Ben Affleck doesn't know how to act. because I don't think I've ever seen him acting in anything. And he thinks acting means staring blankly with your mouth open. Yeah. So when his mouth is closed, he's not acting. But when he thinks he needs to act, he just goes like this. I mean, but audience can't see that.
I will describe it. Lisa's eyes are only partially open, and she has a blank look on her face, and her bottom lip is away from her top lip, and there's a small gap between her upper and lowercase. I was going to say lowercase teeth, but that's not correct.
My lowercase teeth.
Yeah.
My little teeth and my big teeth my mouth.
Yeah.
They're like shaped like different letters of the alphabet.
Yeah, it kind of looks like you're waiting for something and extremely tired.
Yeah, it's like he just woke up.
Yeah.
So every time like someone has a monologue at him or like she's like screaming at him, you're like, I can't believe this, and he just goes like, he doesn't make that noise, but that was the audio representation of the face I was making.
Yeah.
Literally, look at any, like, reaction shot from Ben Affleck in any movie ever, and I guarantee that's the face he's making. I don't even need to have seen that many movies to know that. If you look up...
How many Ben Affleck movies have you seen?
Probably, like, 5.
Okay.
I don't know. Are you going to look up all the Ben Affleck movies and see how many I've seen?
Yeah, I was just going to...
I've seen this one. Yeah, I've seen a lot of the Kevin Smith ones, because you're a Kevin Smith fan.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any Kevin Smith movies till
we
were together.
You've seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The movie.
Oh, okay. He's uncredited in that. You've seen Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, I've seen Dazed and Confused.
Yep. You saw Mallrats.
Yes, we watched Mallrats together.
You've seen Chasing Amy.
Yep.
Have you seen Good Will Hunting?
Yeah.
Okay. He's in Shakespeare in Love.
Yes, apparently. I've seen that.
Armageddon.
Yeah, we watched that together for the podcast.
Dogma.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Reindeer Games.
No.
That was a weird one. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
No.
Okay. Have you seen Pearl Harbor?
No.
Sum of All Fears?
No.
Where he plays Jack Ryan?
No.
You've seen Daredevil?
Yes, I've seen his Daredevil.
Okay. Have you seen Gigi?
The
weird one with Jennifer Lopez?
Is it the one with Giggly?
Yeah, Giggly.
Giggly?
Yeah,
whatever. With an L in it?
Yeah.
Apparently he also was in, I haven't seen that, but it came up in the notes for this movie that apparently he also was in love with the lesbian in that movie.
Right.
Okay, anyway.
Paycheck.
That's
a weird one.
Is that like a Total Recall type situation?
Yeah, it's a, Philip K. Dick.
Yeah. Okay, cool,
Jersey Girl, I Made You Watch.
Did you? Oh, you did, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one where...
We're at 10 so far. That's actually twice as many as I thought I had seen.
He's only in the director's cut of Elektra.
I haven't seen Elektra anyway.
We tried to watch Clerks 2, but apparently my disc is missing.
Okay.
So you haven't seen
that. I haven't seen that.
Have you seen Smoking Aces?
No.
I think I've got that on DVD. State of Play?
No.
He's Not That Into You?
No. Oh, he's just not that into you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen that, actually. Okay. I watched on an airplane in the 2000s.
The Town?
No.
Argo?
I have seen Argo.
Where he also directed.
Yeah, I knew he directed.
Gone Girl?
Yes. And he spends a lot of that movie doing that face.
Yeah. Batman?
No.
Oh, you haven't seen the Batman movies. Apparently he's in The Accountant, Justice League, the reboot of Jay and Silent Bob.
No.
Justice League again.
No.
Haven't seen Deep Water.
No.
Haven't seen Clerks 2.
No.
Haven't seen The Flash.
No.
And apparently The Accountant 2.
No.
Which is a new one that's come out.
But it does explain, because when I saw The Accountant 2 was coming out, I was like, oh, it's a sequel to that movie. And then I read what The Accountant was, and I was like, that's not the movie I was thinking of, but it's Paycheck is the movie
I
was thinking of.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was a sequel to.
Yeah, so it's not the sequel to Paycheck, it's a sequel to a movie called The Accountant, which is an entirely different movie.
Yeah.
I've seen 13 Ben Affleck movies.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've seen him acting.
Fair.
And I think Charlie Cox is a million times better as Daredevil.
Yes. I think everyone would agree.
Yeah. And I will say, I will put my hand up and I will say, when the Netflix Daredevil movie came, or show, TV show, series, web series, whatever you want to call it, came out first, I said, why have they cast the dude from Stardust in this? He can't be Daredevil. And I was immediately corrected. And I was like, one episode in, like, wow, the guy from Stardust can act. Which is not a thing I've ever said about Ben Affleck.
The Defenders, as in the four of them, every one of those shows was fantastic except...
Iron Fist. Which is awful. He's so bad. The show is so bad, but also he's so bad.
It's the... Because I tried watching it.
It's bad.
Yeah. And it is... Every single episode is like an on-off switch of him being like, I'm the immortal Iron Fist. And then the next episode is him complaining about he shouldn't be the immortal Iron Fist.
Yeah. My tier list would be, I put Jessica Jones at the top.
Yeah, Jessica Jones is fantastic.
Oh, I love Jessica Jones. And then Daredevil, and then Luke Cage, and then Iron Fist.
Yeah.
But there's like a... I'd say a decent gap between Daredevil and Luke Cage, and then a much, much wider gap between Luke Cage and Iron Fist. What was I going to say? Ben Affleck. I just want to talk about Ben Affleck some more.
Okay. Because
I'm just baffled by him. So here's the thing, right? I think Ben Affleck's whole career is down to the fact that he just has some cool friends. I think that the fact that he's friends with Matt Damon, and Matt Damon can act.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's friends with Kevin Smith, who will continuously put him in movies, is the reason he has a career at all. Here's what's strange to me. And listen, you guys can come for me in the comments. You guys can come for me. I didn't know who Ben Affleck was growing up, but I heard a lot of people talking about how attractive Ben Affleck was.
Mm.
Like, he was, like, up there as, like, he's, like, one of the hot people in Hollywood or whatever. And, you know, you go to these movies because Ben Affleck's so hot. So I have been eternally confused since the first time I saw what Ben Affleck looks like. Because I think everyone I knew in the 90s and 2000s may have been blind or had a concussion.
Yeah.
Because he's just, like, a mannequin. He's just like a but he's like a shitty mannequin that like all the good mannequins broke and you gotta pull this shitty one out of the basement and it's all covered in goo and you're like, I guess we gotta put this one up. He looks like someone's put a plastic bag over a mannequin face and it just like it kind of got stuck there with some goop.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? That's what his face looks like to me. There's nothing about him that is in any way appealing, in my opinion. And I don't understand it. I don't understand. Do you get it? Do you look at him and you go like, that's an attractive man?
No.
Yeah, I don't understand.
But
you look at Ryan Gosling and you say, that man's attractive.
He is attractive.
There you go. I don't quite see the Ryan Gosling thing as much as you do, but like, I can see it to some extent.
But then,
Ben Affleck, I don't see it.
People find Benedict Cumberbatch attractive.
That I don't understand. At all.
And Eddie Redmayne.
More so than Benedict Cumberbatch, but I still don't agree.
Okay.
But to some extent, I can look at Eddie Redmayne and I'm like, I guess there's aspects here that I can understand why people are putting these together and going, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch? No. Ben Affleck? Absolutely not.
Fair.
Right. Those are in like a. They're in like a
weird niche.
A weird place together.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd is attractive.
Yeah, we can both agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I will say, here we go. It's a controversial opinion. Jason Lee is way more attractive than Ben Affleck.
Interesting viewpoint.
Of the people in that movie, like. Why is Ben Affleck the one that everyone was like, that's the hot guy? I don't see it. And actually, here's another thing, because Kevin Smith has said, and I'm not a Kevin Smith fan, but Kevin Smith said about casting Ben Affleck as essentially himself, that he felt like he was being optimistic in the looks department or something. But honestly, Kevin Smith looks better than Ben Affleck. I was looking at him in that movie, he plays Silent Bob. I was like, that's a better looking guy than dope face across from him who can't, like, make a facial expression. He doesn't have muscles in his face to make a facial expression. I think he's got some kind of facial illness that, like, the muscles in his face don't work, so he can't, like, operate his face to, like, show an emotion. Have you ever seen Ben Affleck have an emotion? That isn't just vaguely confused and sleepy?
I was going to say, like, Argo, he just comes off as vaguely confused and sleepy.
Yeah. I mean, it works in Argo because he's supposed to be kind of confused and sleepy in that movie.
Yeah.
Well cast. I mean, he cast himself, right?
He directed himself.
He was like, don't worry, I got this. This is the movie where I get
it. He is extremely confused in Gone Girl. Like, the entire movie, the premise of why the movie works he comes off as a murderer is because he is confused.
Yes, also, thing. Yeah, there's a whole plot point in Gone Girl where they're like, look how he smiles like a serial killer because he can't actually do a facial expression. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, I believe that because Ben Affleck doesn't know what a smile looks like.
You can wipe out every Batfleck because he's playing Bruce Wayne, but in reality, he's just not emoting.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
People, send me your photos of Ben Affleck doing an emotion. Making a facial expression that's clearly an emotion.
That's not, I'm running away from an explosion or blowing something up as well, because that would also rule out Armageddon and Pearl Harbor.
He doesn't have an emotion though. He's like, oh, blah. Most of this episode is just me roasting Ben Affleck's face. So I'm sorry if that's not what people wanted to hear this Pride Month. This Pride Month, listen to your local queer complain about what Ben Affleck's face looks like.
Yeah. Do you want to get into some trivia? And
yeah, sure.
I know how much money Chasing Amy made, so.
Mm. Yeah, Chasing Amy made less at the box office than the budget of The Object of My Affection.
Correct, but what was the budget of Chasing Amy?
Here's interesting. Let's get into the trivia. So I will say the budget in the end was $250,000.
Yeah.
But Kevin Smith originally pitched the idea to Miramax, and he let them know he had written the parts for Ben Affleck, Jason Lee, and Joey Lauren Adams.
Yeah.
And Miramax said, "We'll give you $3 million if you cast David Schwimmer, Jon Stewart, and Drew Barrymore." Which would have been great, because then we would have had a David Schwimmer movie versus a Jennifer Aniston movie. That would have been fun.
That would have been really funny.
He said, no, I won't do that. And so they didn't give him the $3 million.
What did I just say about the cast of Friends being so hot in that era?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They were, yeah. They would have got... Because I think that was
one of the most...
12 times the budget. They would have got 12 times the budget.
One of the most mind-blowing things about, like, watching one of my favorite HBO shows, which is Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Having David Schwimmer play, in that era of, like... Because a lot of the other actors are, like, up-and-coming.
Yeah.
Versus, like, oh, yeah, David Schwimmer's also in there. And you're like, what? But he was, like, the guy for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot of them, obviously... I think they were so probably contractually locked down to that stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And those two were the highest paid.
Yeah.
At that point. And so they did kind of unionize amongst themselves at one point and go, we're not doing this unless we're all getting paid this amount.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the right thing to do.
Correct.
But for the first few seasons, it was Jennifer Aniston and David Schwimmer were getting paid a lot more than the other people in the show. So those were the two who were in demand. Mm. But yeah, so Kevin Smith was like, I'm not doing that. And then he suggested that he would make the movie himself on his own dime with the three actors, and then Miramax could buy it for distribution if they wanted.
Yeah.
And then they were like, actually, that's a good idea. We'll give you $250,000. So a 12th of the budget that he would have got if he put David Schwimmer in there. And then in box office, it made $12 million. And then the only other thing I took down for that movie was that the script was inspired by his experience with his girlfriend at the time, who was Joey Lauren Adams, who plays Alyssa. So that's weird and confusing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything about her being a lesbian or her being queer in any way. So I think it was just the relationship part of it was based on that. I don't know what was based on it.
Yeah, it's all... I think it's a... When you start... putting your own life and your own experiences onto paper, people will, through speculation, get a bit twisted, and you'll be just like, oh, well, this is, like, clearly him saying that this, you know, scene for scene, this happened in his real life.
Oh, yeah, it's like, no, it's not that. But I don't know what exactly based on. For the other one, most of the trivia was just, these people were going to play, these people were asked to play the characters, these people were asked to play the characters. So what I've taken down is actually from the Wikipedia page, which is that, so it was based on a book. And Paramount Pictures optioned the book in the 1980s.
Wow.
And then in 1993, they brought in Nicholas Hinter as director and were going, and they offered the role of Nina to Winona Ryder.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
Turned it down. So then they cast Uma Thurman and Keanu Reeves.
That would have been a weird movie.
So it was, yeah.
Because there's another person who cannot emote very well.
Uma Thurman or Keanu Reeves?
Keanu Reeves. Yeah.
I love him.
I absolutely love
Keanu Reeves, but
you were
correct.
He's a great person, but there's a reason he plays emotionless killing machines.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's been in some things where he's very fun as a as an actor, but I think...
Yeah, he's extremely fun in Bram Stoker's Dracula, where his accent changes constantly.
Terrible. That is terrible. I was going to say... Always Be My Maybe, where he plays himself, which is just the funniest.
I love that scene.
Everyone just watch that one scene from that movie. Look up YouTube Always Be My Maybe Keanu Reeves scene, and it's so funny. But I think he can act, but I think he has like a small wheelhouse of how he can act. I think in Cyberpunk, he's great.
He's absolutely fantastic.
He's so good. So Keanu Reeves can act, but he has a limit to how he can act, and he plays characters who fit that.
Yeah.
He doesn't try to play beyond that scope. So Paramount then dropped the project. And then, because Paramount dropped the project, Keanu Reeves and Uma Thurman dropped out of it. And then Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd were cast in their place.
Right.
So that's weird. So the budget for The Object of My Affection was $15 million, which is $3 million more than the box office takings of Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
And at box office, it made $47 million. So pretty darn... So they both did pretty well. Like, if you look at, like, percentage profit over what they, you know, what their budgets were, they both did really well. Obviously, you know, there's more money coming in for Object of My Affection. But as you will know from the order in which we watch these films, Chasing Amy is the higher-rated film.
Yeah.
And I think that is entirely because Kevin Smith fans are obsessed with Kevin Smith and would rate his movies higher than they deserve to be rated.
Yeah, but it's the same with any cult director.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if you look at Wes Anderson movies, like, there's high-rated Wes Anderson movies that aren't very good movies.
Yeah, and
I am not a fan
of
The French Dispatch.
It's the same
Come at me.
Yeah. It's the same as Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, yeah. Well, Quentin Tarantino's favorite film from that, from whatever year it was Chasing Amy. Quentin Tarantino loves Chasing Amy.
Yeah. Just a reminder, folks, Quentin Tarantino wrote...
Ironically, I don't think there was many feet shots in Chasing Amy, but when we watched The Object of My Affection, there was, like, there was genuinely a sequence where...
I remember you asking, do you think he's on WikiFeet?
There's a sequence where Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston are in bed together, and he's, like, lying down. They're, like, watching TV. They're not in bed together. You know, they're in the same bed physically. But they're watching TV, and he has his feet propped up right in front of the camera, and then she's like lying on her stomach with her feet back against the headboard. And I was like, there's a shot here where you've got both Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston's feet in it. And I just was like, do you think this is on WikiFeet? I bet that is. I'm not going to go look it up because I have never been on WikiFeet and I don't want to go on it. I feel like you would get so many weird targeted ads if you've ever looked at WikiFeet.
Yeah.
But I would be willing to bet that there is an image from that movie in either Paul Rudd or Jennifer Aniston, or both of them, have, if they have profiles on WikiFeet, which they assuredly do. So I'm surprised that Quentin Tarantino wasn't more into The Object of My Affection than Chasing Amy, because I don't think Chasing Amy had any feet.
What I was going to say is Quentin Tarantino wrote a script for a movie
about feet
that had Selma Hayek make somebody...
Oh, yeah.
Pour alcohol and suck her toes, and then he cast himself in that role.
Yeah.
So, you know, There's no denying.
Oh, yeah, no one's denying it. Everyone knows Quentin Tarantino has a foot fetish.
Yeah.
That's just like a fact that is well known. He doesn't hide it.
No.
He doesn't. Have you ever, like, this is a running joke everywhere that Quentin Tarantino has a foot fetish. Has Quentin Tarantino ever defended himself and said, I don't have a foot fetish?
No.
No, because he does and he knows it and he doesn't give a shit because he gets paid, you know, millions of dollars to suck people's toes.
Well, no, but film it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Thank anyway, you. Now we can put in, you know, in our list of things we discussed in this episode, Quentin Tarantino's foot fetish. Some Paul Rudd's Wikifeed entry.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Stay tuned for another for this month, yeah. I'm sure. I don't know what's happening. Time. I'm just talent. I've got a face for radio.
You've got a better face than Ben Affleck.
Thanks, sweetie. She loves me. Spoilers.
spoiler alert.
Yeah, yeah. Go to our website, ittakes2.co.nz, and you can find a list of things, including our Discord, our mailing list, etc., etc., and also our social media. I tell you what really helps out with the algorithm, with our availability on the internet, is sharing episodes. So if you enjoyed this or you didn't enjoy it and you want some hate flowing at Lisa because she hates Ben Affleck's face so much, share it with your friends. Share it with a Ben Affleck fan club.
Yeah, share this episode with Ben Affleck fan club and send them at me.
Because at least we'll get some clicks. Thank you for joining us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.